Hey, witches. Llewellyn has a book out that we wanted to make sure you knew all about. It is called Houseplant Horticulture by Devin Hunter. It talks about infusing magic into every act of indoor plant care. No plant is ever just a houseplant. Whether you're a green witch or merely horticurious, you can learn how to successfully grow potted plants, connect with their spiritual energies, and partner with them for magic. Houseplant Horticulture also includes a foreword by Juliet Diaz, author of Plant Witchery, and illustrations by Ciolo Thompson, creator of the Hedgewick Botanical Oracle. So grab your gardening gloves and save 20% on Houseplant Horticulture by Devin Hunter. Use coupon code HORT20 at Llewellyn.com. The coupon is valid from April 10th through April 30th. It is not valid in conjunction with other discounts or previously placed orders. Note that you do need to be logged into your Llewellyn account for the coupon code to apply. That's HORT20 at Llewellyn.com. Check it out.
The path of the witch is so unique.
The gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual.
She's actually sending me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Blessed be, yo.
Blessed be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch, and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches. They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit. Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast. I'm your host today. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Kanani.
Kanani was waiting for Hillary to jump in, even though she knew that Hillary was not here today.
True.
For those of you who are like, oh my God, Hillary's been gone 2 weeks in a row. Well, we recorded two episodes in 1 week, and Hillary has been caught up in a big work thing all week. So she is fine. It's just she is trying to do work stuff. So she will be with us for our interview with John. She had to call in. So if she sounds like she's speaking into a tin can, it's because she had to do the interview by phone. You know, this is the world of grassroots podcasting. And sometimes you're joining from a rental car on the side of the road on a work trip on your phone.
It happens.
It happens. I can't even tell you how many times I've done that. So anyway, thanks for the patience. We have a really beautiful episode today. John O'Sullivan from the Irish Pagan School is here to talk to us about Beltane, not Beltane, friends. John will give us more insight into why it is actually Beltane, not Beltane, and hope that you stick around and hear all of it because it is just beautiful. In the meantime, Kanani, I just got my magical ass handed to me again. I was leading a virtual gathering of my platform, my cauldron calling platform, with people that are wanting to deepen or reconnect with their magical practice. And it's just like the secret in the world, which is like, if you are facilitating the event, the thing, like you're the one who gets all the magical crap handed to you. Like everybody else had these really like supportive but constructive messages that they were distilling from the environment and from, you know, from their divination tools. It's like, okay, there's some stuff to work on, but overall it's all right. No, I literally got my ass handed to me. It's like, you've got all the work to do. I went, oh, okay. So that's how it goes. It's the way it was when I was running my coven, usually. And now it is the way I'm running my platform. I'm just getting my butt handed to me. So my Beltane is gonna be a lot about psychic cleanup and reinforcing things and burr-da-da-burr-da-burr.
Oh, yep. God.
What is your Beltane looking like?
You know, I'm actually excited. I was supposed to have lunch with Annie from Necessary Magic today, but unfortunately she had to cancel. And so she's like, hey, can we get together and do lunch on May 1st instead? And I was just like, yes, that sounds like the perfect person to be having lunch with that day. And so she and I are going to get together for lunch that day. So I'm super excited about that. And I don't know. I feel like I'm going to try and have a lot of my spring cleaning and some of my home projects maybe dialed in. Maybe I'll try and make that my final date so that I can just spend that day with friends and celebrating. And I always have try and light the fire in the backyard on the fire festivals. And this is why Bealtaine is one of my favorite, is I'm particularly fond of the four, you know, fire holidays. And yeah, just try and enjoy. I feel like last year it just was, I don't even know what happened. And so yeah, I know I did something. Like, I don't know what I did. And so I feel like these can be more meaningful.
Multi years that were eclipsed from your life. So first of all, we all lost the pandemic years. Those just didn't exist. And then you had your divorce year, which is the same year that I had a newborn. So we both don't remember anything from that year. Yep. So I know we produced content. We should just like go back and listen to all of the episodes and be like, oh yeah, that's a thing that happened.
Actually, it's so funny you say that because I was just talking to someone today who was talking about a friend who was a podcaster who had passed away, and saying how in a lot of ways, you know, that the legacy of their children being able to listen to them on episodes is like actually something that's really interesting and really fun. Yeah. It's kind of a legacy that you leave behind. And I thought that's a really beautiful sentiment, but I am now absolutely horrified at the thought of someday my grandchildren listening to my podcasts and asking my daughter and being like, hey, mommy, did you know grandma was a whore? Like, I'm like, I don't know what's happening right now, because what started off as really a beautiful sentiment, I'm pretty sure is going to keep me from sleeping for the rest of the week. So I'm not really sure what to do. So if suddenly all of our past episodes are deleted from the website, oops, I don't know what happened.
Well, the thing is, you don't know how to do that, so it's fine.
I really don't.
You don't know how. And I don't bother trying to teach you how, because it would be horrifying.
No.
Oh, God.
I mean, I could sleep with someone who knows how, who will do it for me, but I mean,
or then you also talk about the times where you're like, I gave my children to my mother because I didn't want to take care of the children. Mom, you didn't want to take care of us?
They know that, though. I tell that to them all the time. They pack their bags. They're like, can we live with grandma? I'm just like, you know, it's supposed to be a threat. Like this, you take all the fun out of it. You take all the joy, you know, by the fact that you're so happy there. It ruins all the things. They don't care. So yeah, we might do something fun. We had a friend who used to give out gifts of cookies and like just baked goods, essentially baked goods and flowers, and they would drop them off. And so I was thinking I might do something like that with my kids. Maybe we're not going to give them to anyone because, you know, people are gross.
Not give your kids to anyone? Oh, your cookies. Like,
no. We're not going to. If we get flowers, I'm keeping the flowers. Like, I want the flowers in my room. Like, you don't need my flowers. But, you know, we might do something cute or fun like that and do something maybe a little intentional. Maybe give them to some of the neighbors or things like that. And, but yeah, I got kind of, now that I'm less fuzzy, I want to do things a little more intentionally this year than I was able to last.
And also, you don't have somebody standing over you going, what are you doing? Why are we doing that? What's that about?
Why are you doing that? That doesn't make sense. That's, you don't
you
need
know
to
what?
Do that.
That's what that you do to me. You do that to me all the time. What are you doing?
But it's true.
Why are we doing that?
But when I say it, it's true. Like, that's the difference. When I say it, you know, it's so funny because now whenever I do something fucked up, I hear either your voice or Hillary's voice going, why are you like this? Like, I hear it. You're not even there. And I hear it. I do something fucked up. And I hear your guys' voice haunting me going, why are you like this?
Why are you like this?
Why are
that's
you like
a Hillary
this?
Thing.
That sentence, it's only that sentence. Why are you like
that's
this?
That's Hillary. Why are you like this? When she's
all
like
the time.
So done. So done.
All the time. I'll do something fucked up and I'll hear that. Or I'll think a fucked up thought and then I hear that. And I hear the voice and I'm like, it's true. I understand
why
it's asked.
It's so good.
Doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Oh,
but yeah, so that's
man.
What I'm doing. I want to do something fun for Bealtaine this year. I really do. I want to do something. We'll do the fire. We'll probably bake some things and maybe get some fun flowers. And maybe I'll have her, you know, maybe take a card or something like that if she wants to some little girlfriends at school, or just do something fun. I like the holidays. I like all the holidays. I don't know. This year's better. Last year was, like I said, just a blur of adrenaline and crazy and just get through it. So I'm enjoying my moment of peace, knock on wood, and hoping it sticks around for a little bit because I'm actually starting to feel like I'm accomplishing things, which is amazing. I need to go to the Sasquatch Festival.
Well, we need to do that.
There's a Squatch Festival and I need to go to that one too. And I don't even know what to say. There's just so much, everything about it. It needs to happen. I need to be there. I need to be amongst my people and we need to hang out. It was so funny. This was like a year ago and I was talking to my son and I don't know how the conversation started, but we were talking about all my boyfriends and hypothetical boyfriends, because I'm constantly, you know, calling people my boyfriend or my girlfriend or whatever. So we're talking about my quote unquote boyfriends. And he says something about Sasquatch can't be my boyfriend. And I was like, well, first of all, keep your laws off my body. But second, I was like, I'm going to need an explanation for this. And it was really funny because he had literally thought this through. And he said, your chance of having Sasquatch as your boyfriend was so that he could be my dad and I could be half magical and I could be half Squatch. And since you screwed that up for everybody, now you're just cut off. Now you have no access because that's not part of, you know, his parentage. And I was just like, wow, that's intense, but fair. He's clearly bitter. He's bitter and angry that he's not half Squatch. I didn't even realize that was an option, but clearly in his mind it was, and I fucked it up. So I get it. I have to accept the consequences.
A children's book or a Netflix series, The Sasquatch Stepson.
That's a good idea. And that needs to be a show.
Yeah.
That needs to be a show.
Netflix producers, reach out to us. We will write a show for you. I want to be like the Kimmy Gibbler. Like, I always identified with her more than any character on television when I was growing up. The annoying friend. It was just like way over the top. That was me. So the Sasquatch stepson will be starring Kanani. I mean, the only person who could really play Sasquatch would need to be Jason Momoa. I mean, we know this is.
I mean, this is what I'm saying.
This is what I'm saying. You know, put a little fur on him, and he'll be good. And I'll just be like the grown up Kimmy Gibbler.
I love
person.
This.
Yeah,
I love this. But yeah, so that was a long time ago. My son was giving me a list of all the people who couldn't be my boyfriend, and Sasquatch was on the you missed your chance list. I was very upset about that, but I understand. You have to accept consequences.
Yeah,
he wasn't born half Squatch, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
What are you doing for Bealtaine?
Well, so one of the things we learned from John is about the role of the yellow flowers in protecting the house and home. So, you know, my Oregon grape is flourishing. So something with that. And I think this is really the time of year when I start to come out of hiding, so to speak. And I'll be out in the dirt and encouraging my beautiful native plants to grow and flourish. And hopefully my blue-eyed grass will bloom again on Bealtaine, which it has the last few years, which is a joy.
I think it was 3 years ago, you and I went to the native plant sale in your town.
Yes.
And I picked out specifically things that like to be in moist soil because I have a part where my whole yard drains. And so all of that dirt just is pretty much wet all the time. And it gets good, but it gets good sun. And so that was going to be my butterfly garden. And I bought, I don't know, just probably like 6 or 7 plants when I was with you and I planted them. And so it's been about 3 years now and they're just nuts.
Yes.
And I keep thinking that like I need to buy plants for that space. And I actually bought a couple and I went over there and I'm like, there is nowhere to put these plants. Like everything has filled out and grown out and it looks really cool and fun. And so, yeah, that's actually really...
When you grow native, you don't have to do much. You just stick them in the ground and then you don't have
they're just
house the water. They're like, this is my environment. I mean, my pearly everlasting is taking over the yard, which is fine. Yeah. So
yeah, I need to get some more pearly.
You don't need to get more pearly. It will provide more pearly. Just let it roll. Don't buy more pearly. Let it roll.
No, I don't have any. I think
you don't have any.
I had one. I had one and I didn't get it in the ground fast enough. And I don't think it made it. I know who I need to get it from though. I need to get from our friends at Witches Resistance.
Yes.
She has given me Pearly before and I need to reach out to her because I know that she gets lots of it and she's such a good caretaker for it.
Yeah. You'll like it. It likes disturbed soil. So you're like, oh, a plant that's after my own heart enjoys disturbed places.
Right.
So we're going to keep this a shorter intro because we actually have a pretty long interview with John after this. So let's go ahead and hear from our beautiful sponsors and come back and talk Bealtaina with John O'Sullivan.
That sounds amazing.
We cannot tell you how many witches have gotten hooked on jasmine pearl tea.
Well, it's friggin' delicious.
And you jasmine pearl fans, they have a whole array of absolutely phenomenal winter teas to keep you warm and comforted through these next few cold and miserable months.
Like their golden fire tea, every sip of that tea is an adventure. The turmeric brings warmth and grounding that combines with a zesty kick of ginger and cayenne to create a glow of flavors that dance on your tongue. More than just the taste, golden fire heals you from within. It's perfect for those wintry days when you need a bit of warmth, and you can even try it as a latte.
And let's talk wellness. This tea isn't just a delight to the senses, it's a guardian for your well-being, especially during cold and flu season. It feels like a nurturing shield, fortifying and protecting.
A tea that has become a personal favorite of mine, especially during these challenging times, is the Well-Being Blend. It's not just any tea. It's like a comforting friend, offering support when you need it most. Imagine a blend of elderberries, echinacea, red clover, and rose hips. Each sip feels like it's boosting your immune system. Perfect for those days when you feel a bit off or have been around others or under the weather yourself. And the peppermint in this tea, it's incredibly refreshing, especially if you're feeling stuffed up.
Hold on, let me bring you a sip of serenity. A moment of tranquility, will we? Courtesy of Jasmine Pearl's exquisite Tranquility Green Tea, close your eyes and envision lush Chinese tea gardens where each leaf whispers the secrets of centuries-old traditions. This isn't just a tea. It's an invitation to embark on a journey of peace and harmony. Breathe in the essence of this carefully cultivated leaf. A sip can take you on a sensory journey that transports you to a place of calm, where time slows down and every moment is savored. Disclaimer, Tranquility Green Tea experiences may include a heightened sense of inner calm, a peaceful disposition, and a newfound appreciation for the artistry of Chinese green tea.
Supporting small businesses are very important to us, and the Jasmine Pearl is a family-owned tea importer and specialty tea blender, which is based in Portland, Oregon, and they have been crafting tea blends for 17 years and direct sourcing teas from origin since 2004. Their blending and sourcing philosophy is based in the love of fine teas and herbs, which is why they focus on blending with exceptional ingredients, hand blending each batch using mainly organic ingredients, and wow, does it show.
Check out these phenomenal teas at thejasminepearl.com. Save 10% with the new coupon code WITCH2024. That's WITCH2024. Free shipping on orders over $35. Make sure you let them know you heard about them on That Witch Life podcast. And thank you to Jasmine Pearl for being an episode sponsor.
Hey, witches! Our beloved kitchen witch, Dawn Hunt of Kachina Aurora, is back, and she has all kinds of new delicious magic, and we are here for it.
My husband turns 50 this year, and if I gave him a case of Kachina Aurora's magical marinara as a milestone birthday present, he would not complain, especially now that Kachina Aurora has magical marinara sauces, roasted garlic pomodoro, and sweet basil pomodoro.
Yes, those are so incredible, and with months of cold, rainy weather still ahead of us, I'm all about warm, tasty, super easy meals to make, which is why I absolutely love Kachina Aurora's risottos. Just listen to these flavors. Garlic and Italian herb, hearty mushroom, garden vegetable, they're delicious and super simple to make and perfect for a cozy winter meal.
Not to mention the coffees. She has whole bean moon coffees. The full moon is a light roast, the half moon is a medium roast, and the dark moon is a dark roast. It is all amazing and exactly what you need to start your day.
We have so many coffee witches that are so hooked on these blends. I mean, they're just, not only do they have these wonderful names and qualities, they're legitimately delicious coffees, but literally everything Kachina Aurora makes is incredible. And if you haven't gotten it yet, you have to check out A Kitchen Witch's Guide to Recipes of Love and Romance and Kitchen Witchcraft for Beginners, Spells, Recipes, and Rituals to Bring Your Own Practice into the Kitchen. The recipes are glorious and they're really easy to make and they are so magical.
Whether you once tried the famous infused olive oil, the scrumptious risotto, or literally anything Dawn creates, go to KachinaAurora.com ASAP and use code WITCHLIFE to get 10% off. That's code WITCHLIFE.
Thank you to Kachina Aurora for being an episode sponsor.
Okay, well, I'm stoked because we finally have him on the show. John O'Sullivan on Shkili Beag is an Irish tour guide, weaver of words, a teller of tales of his patron deity, the Dagda, chief of the Tuatha De Danann. He runs a blog post posting monthly stories inspired by native lore. His Patreon gives you early access to the tales as well as having the stories told directly to you in the form of audio downloads. He lives with his family in County Waterford, Ireland, with his partner, Laura O'Brien. He is the co-founder of the Irish Pagan School. It's not always easy to find the words, but when you find the right words, you can change hearts and minds. John, welcome
Hi.
To That Witch Life Podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm very grateful to be here. I appreciate the introduction. And the last part of what you read is actually a quote by me, because I've come to learn that over time. Like the words that we use are like many and frequent, because that's how we communicate with other beings of our human condition. But the moment when you get the right words, that transformation that can happen is awe inspiring. Every time I have the honor to find the right words for someone. Plus also I'm a big nerd. And so like there's the labyrinth reference of like, use your right word.
No, I mean, I love that. So I feel like I've met you in person, but I have not. But, you know, you are so warm and so welcoming. And especially during the pandemic, when the Irish Pagan School started hosting the social Saturdays, the second Saturdays, and people could just show up. And I know at one point I just showed up and I just burst into tears, and you were so chill. I'm just kind of like, it's all right. We're having it. It is a tough time.
Yeah. Like literally the world was broken.
Yeah.
And all of the preconceived, and that's one thing I actually enjoyed strangely about the global like lockdown, not the pandemic, because like people dying and being sick is shitballs and never fun for anyone. But the lockdown really showed us some of the fragility of our understandings of our society. Mm-hmm. And what actually came out of that was community. Mm-hmm. Like people's need to be seen by like-minded individuals, to be accepted by like-minded individuals, people's need to like interact not just with home and family environments, people's need to not just act within work or obligations or responsibilities, you know, the need and the fulfillment that comes from being part of spiritual community, because that's really what we do at the Irish Pagan School.
Yeah, it's always fun when I'm able to join y'all, because you really feel that. It feels that it's such a tight-knit global community.
yeah
Well,
we've worked really hard at that, and I'm not going to say that sprung up like mystically overnight in any way, shape, or form. That is the labor of love for myself and Laura for many actually years, and some of the labor on that is ensuring that it is inclusive and it's accepting, and that we're making space for everyone. We're acknowledging everyone's like uniqueness, but also the fact that we are part of something collectively bigger. Mm-hmm. And then also being a little bit shameless about the fact that we have hard boundaries. The only way to build safe and inclusive community is by having firm boundaries and saying, this shit is not okay. This is acceptable. This is welcome. Pull up a chair, take a seat. Don't be an asshole. Like, and the moment someone shows themselves as not willing to offer compassion, respect, the moment so shows themselves not willing to sit down and learn and actually learn the uncomfortable stuff, You know, when they come across something or hear something in a community space or in a teaching environment that makes them feel uncomfortable, the people who lash back at that are usually the ones who have the most fucking work to do.
Yes.
And we've seen it in the social sessions, people like yourself kind of having an emotional release, crying, like needing some kind of experience. People get like fierce fucking giddy and get into laughing fits as well, which I'm honored to see. Although there's now, there's at least four children born during pandemic times who yes. cannot sleep unless they hear my voice because their parent was turning up during the social sessions.
Aww.
And one person didn't make it for a while. And then they came back and realized, like, why is my child not sleeping? This is nap time. Why is the child not napping? And then they realized they weren't showing up at the Live at Five sessions anymore. So they went and found me talking a story on YouTube. They played that and
boom,
gone.
Oh, that's so funny.
This is the power of story and the power of gentle words. I mean, and even in, I think people are afraid. Sometimes I think people are afraid to set hard boundaries because they're afraid of hurting people's feelings. And I have seen the opposite in community is that when boundaries are not set, that's when people trip on things. And I know that there was one example recently where, not recently, but it's actually a couple of years ago, we had somebody come to us as a podcast and was upset that one of her she had a Facebook post in a witchcraft group was removed because she was asking about pregnancy related issue. And they said, we don't allow pregnancy. They took her post down and she didn't, she was so sad because they weren't, they, you know, she, it was a very personal thing she was sharing. And my response was, it's not the problem. I mean, it's very sad, but the problem is not that they're not allowing pregnancy talk. The problem is they didn't tell you that.
Yeah.
Because if it's okay to say, we're not discussing pregnancy here, that's perhaps it moves into the realm of medical diagnosis. They don't want to do that. Or you have people who have experienced a number of losses. They don't want to, you know, but without that boundary being clearly stated, here's somebody came and exposed themselves in something very, they were looking for help. They thought they could ask for it. It was clearly something very personal and important to them, and it was rejected. And if she had known from the beginning that, well, this is not the place for pregnancy, she could have talked. She could have taken that somewhere else and found the support she needed instead of experiencing the rejection on top of that, you know, that sensitive moment. And so it's like, to be clear about boundaries is an act of compassion. It really is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. Because you're defining the space in which the discussion is going to happen. You're defining the space in which the connection, the interactions, the energy is going to happen. And that just makes it much more efficient. That just makes it much more engaging. And that allows for people to have a deeper experience and to feel included in the narratives and the conversations.
Right.
Now, it is about striking a fine balance because we see it in a lot of our stuff as well, where we have all of our social media groups have an agreement that you have to, like, you tick the box to enter it. And that tick box is, how did you read the list of things? Mm-hmm. Did you read the things that says, you know, this is a group for this, this is a group for that? And that then empowers the moderators within our group to say, okay, well, here's the teaching moment. You know, what you're posting is because is against this particular definition. And it's not a case of denying access. It's not a case of saying, oh, only these people are allowed in here, because we get accused of gatekeeping all the time. But it's not gatekeeping. It's community management. Like, okay, I do say that, yes, I keep the gate and I stand in that gateway, keeping it open for as many people to get through as possible, because I want people to come in to join our community. My objective is to get as many people as possible to experience an authentic connection to Ireland through our mythology, through our teaching, through our, like, you know, stories, through our ancient practices. That's why I'm doing all of this.
Yes.
So if I'm keeping a gate, I'm bodily keeping that gate open for as many people as possible to come through. But it is an acknowledgement that not everyone is going to gel with it in the right way. Not everyone is going to be comfortable doing the deeper work when it comes to some of the aspects that are asked of them when it comes to spiritual community. Because it's not just a sit-down chat, like, let's sit down over a pint to talk about, like, whatever comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a lot of these cases, the community is talking about, as you said, personal experiences, those personal narratives where they're having some form of spiritual growth, some form of spiritual experience, something that goes outside of the regular mundane realm of discussion. So how and where are they going to find safe space to talk about that? Where are they going to find people that will not brush them off as crazy, not tell them that they're mad, not tell them that, oh, it's all in your head? You know, where are they going to find anyone who's going to sit down and say, okay, well, I've never experienced that, but I accept that you have, and here's what I can help with. Here's how, you know, the narrative can be moved. And even that validation of knowing that you're not alone, that can be enough for some people. Like, I might not have the answers when people come and ask me the question, but I will delight in sitting down and saying, thank you for sharing it. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for that interactive. So it's a tricky fine balance. And again, I say we've been doing this for years, and there is times where people come into our groups, and I don't name any names because that's not what I'm on about, but there was a person who came into the group and they read the rules, they read the instructions, and they began to interact. They began to communicate. It was like, great, okay. And our moderators were like, okay, well, we need to steer them a little bit. This is an Irish-centric group. This is talking about Irish mythology. No, it's not Scottish. It's not Welsh. It's not this, you know. And their language and their rhetoric began to shift and change based on their own personal experiences. And so we give a bit of space, but we say, listen, sorry, the guidelines are clear. We need to bring you back. And then it escalated beyond the mods to me. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to start taking on board, interacting with this person. And so I did. I anytime they posted, I came to me. I kind of checked it over. I tried to educate, tried to steer them. And they invariably led to what we refer to as a flounce, where they go in, they make a post all about how this is all terrible, how dare we undermine their experiences, how dare we kind of question them and not allow them to be acknowledged for the special snowflake person they are, and they bounced. A year later, I got an email from this person saying, hi, can I please return to the groups? I realize I was wrong. And that to me was, yeah, absolutely fine. Like, we never kicked you out of the group. We're happy to have you in the space. You know, they went away and they did the work. They went away and they did the learning. They experienced other communities out there where there was no supports, there was no structures, and they realized that the IPS community was actually where they wanted to be for their own growth. But it's not amazing.
And that's a really unusual situation, because a lot of times people don't come back and apologize. It's something I noticed. It's funny. But I want to talk about you. And yes. So let's hear.
Don't talk about me. I get embarrassed when people talk about me.
No, that's okay.
Other than me.
Well, people aren't going to talk about you. You're going to talk about you. So here we go. So, John, how did you know that you were a witch or a magical person?
I still don't know if I am. Okay. And I'll be honest. As a kid, I always felt too big or too old. You know that saying, oh, that person's an old soul. The first time I remember, I recall someone referring to me as an old soul, I was 5. It was my granny. She just looked at me one day because I had a seriousness about me. But I'd always had that kind of feelings of like too big or like, you know, old soul kind of stuff. And as a kid, I just chalked it off to an active imagination. And that was it. You know, I just got on with it and carried on just trying to live the life I could. But I grew up in a spiritual household. Like, you know, my mother was very much Catholic Christian. And so I was raised firmly with the concept of faith and belief as standard in all of our existence. Yes, I was going to Mass every Sunday with my mother. I was actually in the choir in Mass. My siblings were all in the choir. I was not in the choir. I threw a huff as a kid in order to be in the choir. Aww. And then I was only the only male child in the choir. And then I realized I didn't want to be in the choir. And my mother was like, no, you've made your agreement. You have to stay in the fucking choir now. And then my voice broke. Puberty hit, my voice broke. And I was like, yes, reason not to be in the choir.
You're like, oh, no, I can't be in the choir.
Oh, no.
all squeaky voice. But if I'll be honest, it was mid-20s. It was mid to late 20s when my life collapsed. I was estranged from family, estranged from friends. I had a toxic marriage, which collapsed and left me on my own with absolutely no one except the dog. And in that time, without any other structures, without anyone else placing expectations on me, without like being son, without being brother, without being partner, without being lover, without anything else other than me, I broke down to the smallest common denominator that was myself. And I literally ended up on my knees calling out to the universe. And it was a dark time. I actually refer to it as the dark times in my life. But from there, things began to change. Now, I am very skeptical. I'm very analytical. I approach things very logically in many ways. But then when some of the experiences begin to defy logic, but can't actually be ignored, when some of the things that begin to happen are just too real, but lack normal definitions within the mundane, that's when stuff began to stack up for me. And since then, I've come to the very considered opinion that it is not my imagination. It is not coincidence. I can't write it off anymore, that there is aspects of my life that can only be defined by the word magical, or by the word spiritual, or the concepts of faith and belief. So I'm in my 40s now. I won't say exactly what my age is, because my eldest child here is like, you're an ageless being. I never want to know your age. but we're over a decade on from there. And I'll be honest, I've been very stubborn to the point of being obtuse about my spiritual growth in the past, to the point that the deity, the God that I work for, the Dag, the patient as he all is, had to bother the Morrigan into getting the Morrigan to bother her priest into saying his name out loud in front of me, so that I would actually have a name to put on this powerful energy entity that I'd been perceiving around me, because I didn't want to know. I knew, but I didn't want to know. And I tell the story a lot with myself and Laura lying in the bed of the couple. Out of nowhere, she just turns and goes, okay, I'm going to say this because I have to say this, and I'm going to say it. I'm going to be done. I'm not involved with this anymore. The Dag, the done. That's how I heard his name. That's how suddenly the name applied to the entity who had been patiently standing there, arm folded, foot tapping, waiting for me to actually say, okay, let's have a conversation. So I don't know if that answers that question. Like, I think I've always had an interest, a passion. I think looking back at it, I've always had those kind of perceptions. I was the kid who would disappear into the forest, like given less than half an opportunity, given a blink, given the smallest lapse in consciousness or conscious awareness from my parents or my scout leaders or whatever, I was gone. I was the child who would be gone for hours off amongst the woods and then come back completely fine, where I probably shouldn't have come back very fine, especially with woods in Ireland. But yeah,
in the United States, disappearing into the woods has a very true crime.
Yeah, it's usually intentional, we're like, and not the intention of the person who disappeared.
Yeah, well, we don't have any large kind of predators here in this country, apart from human predators, which are the worst. So, yeah, but I suppose you ask, like, when did I know or how did I know? I can't say that I do know, but what I will say is I believe. And that is enough for me.
I love that. Thank you.
I like that too.
Because there's a lot of folks that feel like they need to put more. It is something that Laura and I actually talked about in our live conversation a few weeks ago. That there was this big, you know, needing to label, explain, and check the boxes. And I love that you're giving people that freedom in that. And when you say, "Hey, I don't have to know, but I do believe," and that's enough. And it is. It's more than enough. Honestly, that's what's important.
Yeah. And I don't ask anyone to believe in me. I don't expect anyone to kind of agree with my definitions or to honor the gods in the same way that I honor the gods. In fact, people there are some things I do honoring my deities that you should not fucking do, because I am so stubborn and belligerent. I do things the hard way, which is why I'm an educator now, because I don't want people to do it the hard way. Mm-hmm. But all I can do is share a story, tell someone about my experiences, point them to the resources, and then allow them the space to grow in their own way and to grow in their own right. Because belief and our spirituality is so unique to each and every one of us, because we are each and every one of us unique in our upbringing, our culture, our ethnicity, our DNA, our fingerprints. Every single one of us is unique. And so expecting for someone else to get it the way I get it or do it the way I do it is not realistic. It's mm-hmm. untenable. Exactly. And it's quite harmful in some ways.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I feel the same way. I was gonna say, I describe the exactly what you said to people when they say, why do you believe that? Or, or they look at me crazy and they're like, why do you think that? The only real explanation I have to offer people is I've experienced too many things to not. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to describe because they're personal experiences. Mm-hmm. I've experienced too many things, seen too many things, had too many things come to fruition that there is no logical explanation for, other than I am now a firm believer in spirituality and magic.
Yeah.
And I think people need to allow themselves that time, because like you said, that mm-hmm, builds mm-hmm. over time. That's not instant. Yeah. It may take you 10 years to kind of find your feet, because it is. Sometimes it's just a stacking of those experiences, and that just takes time, and it happens.
Yeah, and it's being open to it. It's maintaining that openness, that curiosity, that interest, and allowing yourself the time to grow. Like, trees don't become trees overnight. Trees start as seeds in the ground, and they have to struggle, they have to push, they have to kind of stretch. And then year on year, they add on more. But what are they adding on? They're adding on experiences. They're adding on more nutrients. They're adding on more interaction with their environment around them. And that allows them to grow to become bridges between earth and sky.
Mm. Mm. Well, I could keep going down this path forever because I have so many thoughts rushing through my head, but we have a big holiday coming up, and friends, listen, this is not me judging you when I say this. This is me, as John said, trying to educate. It's not Beltane. It's Beltana. And so John is here to talk to us about Beltana.
Is anyone really shocked that you're judging, though?
No, I'm not shocked. Judgy. I just get really irritated.
Yeah.
I'm not actively judging. I'm just mini judge. I'm just annoyed.
And like,
that's fair.
Add on an extra level of an annoyance when you're actually from Ireland and speak the Irish language and understand that the Irish word for the month of May is Beltane. So in school, we literally learned the word Beltane still because it's the name of the month of May.
Yeah.
And so when we have people talking, and same for October, October is Samhain.
Yeah.
You know? So when we have people turn around, it's like, oh, no, it's Beltane and Samhain, accents aside, culture. I've actually run into people so frustratingly, and they got into it with us over the fact that it's Beltane. Then they were like, no, we're, again, cautiously, gently, this is the education, here's the information. And what they threw back to us was, well, it's always been Beltane in my tradition, and so I'm going to stick with my tradition.
And you're like,
where does your tradition get it?
I'm curious. And I act from openness and curiosity. It's like, oh, great. What tradition is that? Where's the lineage? Where does it come from? Oh, well, this comes back down to, this is going on the last 75 years in things. At that point, I'm like, I'm sorry. What? Your tradition of the last 75 years? One person's fucking lifetime? Against my entire country's language and culture for the last thousands of years?
Yeah.
It's shocking to me that people would double that. Like, it's one thing if they're like, oh, that's so strange. I've always called it this. But thank you for letting me know. it's always crazy to me when people double down. They're like, no, that's your language.
Yeah, we had somebody double down on us on Instagram a couple years ago because we said Beeltanon, we spelled it in the Irish in the Irish form, and somebody said, "Where'd you get that spelling?" And we said, "Well, this is how the Irish spell it."
Right.
This is how the Irish spell it, and we follow the native sources, and you know, we went and then this person went back and goes, "Well, we all do things differently, and we can reserve our judgments."
That's one of the worst kind of cop-outs.
I mean, maybe they can. Kanani can't. She judges everyone all the fucking time. So I don't know how to.
She comes by it honestly. So no one judges more than Kanani's mom.
Truth. So, I don't want to be judged by that woman. I love her. But I don't want her to judge me.
But, John, so for those who are not as familiar or they think they know what Beeltanah is because they've, you know, what is Beeltanah? We know it's the word for month of May, but
Okay. So Beeltanah still exists in our language as the current language for the month of May, but it does come from our older mythology. It does come from our older kind of practices, and we can trace that back through the manuscripts, through like, you know, hundreds of years. So, you know, park your tradition of 75 years. I can actually go back to documents dated to the 9th century where it talks about practices around this time of year, about the shift in the seasons. So Beeltanah, if you want to do the etymology translation of it, it pretty much comes down to like a burning fire. Like Tinna is the word for fire, and Bel is not Bel or Baal or some Old Testament demonic entity. It's literally a blazing fire is what it translates to. And it sits as the second in the four great fire festivals of the Irish calendar. Now, we're not talking specifically pagan in many ways. It does go back to pagan times, but it has still been honored as fire festivals right now. Like, you know, there is festivals held, there's gatherings, there's fairs, and there's a lot of stuff done around Beeltanah, which still honor the ancient traditions because it is a time for the shift in seasonal energies, which is the shift in the natural environment as things come out of springtime where the initial kind of growing has happened. This is when light and kind of warmth comes back into Ireland based on the seasons. So this is the time when all of your pre-prepared kind of sowing, because again, Ireland was very much agricultural, but all the seeds and planted, this is the time when they get into gear and actually do all of the growth. Now, Beeltanah is the last day of April, first day of May. And on that time frame, there was always festivals held, but it's a time for light, growth, abundance, as in focusing on your abundance and what you're growing into your future, and protection, protecting for yourself, your agreements, and again, your abundance to make sure that no one else steals your abundance, which was quite a common practice as well. So, yeah, it is the second great fire festival in the seasonal calendar of Ireland. And I don't know if I've overtalked it or defined it too much, but I can still keep talking about it.
No, please do. But one of the things I wanted to ask is, I mean, like you said, you do a lot of educating of people all around the world about this. And what are some of the bigger misconceptions you find that people have about Beeltanah?
Apart from mispronouncing it?
Besides for the mispronouncing it, misspelling it, all that.
Yeah, well, actually, I touched on one of them. There is the kind of twisting and changing the etymology of the language to suit their own interests. Mm-hmm. Now, this is quite a common practice because we know that the early Christians did similar stuff.
Yes.
When trying to undermine kind of pagan spirituality in the country. Now, so it's not uncommon, but those people today who are ignoring the Irish language or ignoring the roots of the linguistic structure because they want to just satisfy their own interpretation, or, well, we can all just do it our own way. They too are honoring a tradition of ignoring indigenous knowledge and indigenous wisdom. So, you know, as a person of this country, fuck them too.
Right.
But yeah, there is this kind of the Christian influence and this kind of Old Testament, like, you know, Baal or these pagan gods, and that it's fire sacrifices to this god Baal, and that's why it's called Baaltane. That is bullshit. That is absolute straight up bullshit. It literally is this blazing fire or light, and it is talking about this shift and change in light energy as we move to the times of abundance and growth. One of the things that bothers me about it is people kind of not knowing the specifics that are associated with each festival, mm-hmm. and then thinking that they can just swap experiences or swap kind of stuff. Well, you know, I get to take parts from here. I get to pick and mix my ritual from the seasonal calendar to make something that works for me. Okay, yeah, sure, fine. But then don't kind of present that as native original like source. Don't kind of present that as the true kind of stuff, because it's not. It is very clear structures, very clear guidelines about what the energies involved around these seasonal events, these big seasonal events is. And like way back into our history, we knew that on at the end of April. Now, okay, we say April, right? Because not this isn't exactly defined to calendar, mm-hmm. because we have to acknowledge that our modern understanding of the calendar is quite modern. Like, you know, throw in a couple of fucking Roman emperors who wanted to have months named after them. Thanks, fucking Augustus. There we go. I want a whole new fucking month, right? So when we talk about calendar timeframes, it's always going to be a little bit tricky. And that's where we say now our best kind of approximation for the celebration of Bieldana is the last day of April into the first day of May. Now, culturally speaking, this wouldn't be just a singular day. It would actually be an entire period. It would be the seasonal kind of shift that would be happening around the change in the weather, the change in the patterns, because all of it was based on agriculture. And so when we come out of wintertime, when we get into Imbolc around the spring kind of period, you know, things are beginning to get bright. You have to do all your cleaning out. Then you have to do all of your sowing of your seeds, etc. And then when you hit Bieldana, that's when your growth really kicks off. That's when, like, you know, you're then into, I'm growing this for my harvest, which is going to come in Lunasa. So at this point, you're protecting the fuck out of what you have put your efforts into, and you're carrying on with the efforts where you are now to ensure that harvest towards the end of the year. So the misconceptions around it, like, it is based on misinformation, mm-hmm. and it's based on a misunderstanding. So I try very hard not to be judgmental. I try very hard not to be, you know, defensive around it, because I pity people who don't actually get it. And I want them to get it. I want them to be able to put something real and authentic. I want them to be able to look at the practices and trace it back through the generations, because it's not just energy within the moment. It's ancestral energy that has been honored right the way back to the first time the fires were lit on the hill of Tlachta, right the way back to, like, you know, the Druids lighting the bonfires, you know, on the hill of Ward to be observed from Tara. And that was one of the practices of Bieldana. And so actually that was the point I wanted to make. Everyone had to put their fires out. Everyone had to actually completely put out their fires. And then one fire was lit. And that was lit on the hill of Tlachta. And I think, you know, it was lit by the Druids. At that point, fire would be taken from that central fire and brought around to the other places. And then you would then have your fire for the rest of the year, because you wouldn't let the fire go out. You'd maintain it. And even if it's your cooking fire at home, you'd bank it down in the evening, but you'd make sure you bring those embers back up in the morning. And so there was one time a year when all the fires were put out, when all the cleaning and the shifting and energy was done, and then new fires were picked up. So there was so much to it. And then you'd have to be careful not to light your fire too soon, because one of the amazing things in folklore, and this was practiced in parts of rural Ireland right up into the early 1900s, that if someone lit their fire before you did on May Day, you could steal the smoke from their fire and add it to your fire. So you steal their abundance for the entire year.
Wow. There's so much about, like, with also the lore about, you know, not giving butter away on, yes, on Bieldana. And and I've, you know, embraced that for, like, if somebody asked me for something in my neighborhood, because we have a lot of unusual characters that wander through my neighborhood. And sometimes they ask for things. Yeah. And I just have stopped answering my door at Bieldana. I'm like, yeah. If they really are in need, there are social services that can help them. My office hours are closed for now, just until tomorrow. Like,
just not just today. Tomorrow. Just not today. Yeah.
And culturally speaking, that was quite common. You know, like when you would understand it, like some part of it, and this is where the whole concept of charms and pishogues come in, as in curses. Not all curses are, I'm going to destroy your family forever. You know, not all curses are full on mocha. Nine generations of Ulstermen can get fucked because they were assholes. You know, sometimes the curses is, I'm just going to put a small bit of curse on your milk so that, like, you know, I get better milk, which means my butter sells for a higher price next year. That was standard. Yeah. So when we talk about Yeltsin being a term of protection, because it is this time when abundance kind of kicks up a notch, it's just this time when growth kind of takes it to the next level, you got to be on guard. You got to be watching out for, like, everything you have been putting your effort and energy into. Because, yeah, those who know may try and take advantage of it. Or if you don't know, you may lose it without knowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what are some of the practices that you might encourage modern day? The question I said, I listed as witches, but really, honestly, anyone who's a spiritual person or magically minded person who wants to embrace some of the practices of Beelzebub, what are some of the things that people might be able to do?
Right. So one of the other things about Beelzebub energy is it is a time when, as I said, seasonal shift is happening, but cultural shifts are happening. So it's actually a time of agreements. It's a time when people would be like, okay, well, you know, you'd kind of get your early kind of agreement in with someone, like when your harvest comes due, I get a portion of this, you get a portion of that. Or, you know, I'm going to like take care of your cattle up in the high hills, you know, if you kind of pay me when I come back in a few months. So it was culturally a time of agreements. And so anyone now who wants to kind of take on board some practice or some focus for their workings or their energies at this particular time, I would encourage them to reconsider their agreements. And not just reconsider, I'm talking about active awareness of your relationships with your gods, guides, guardians, your community, anywhere you're investing energy, you know, be it like, you know, spiritual energy, you know, physical energy, anything there at all, honoring that around Beeltana. And like, we're talking about contract releases as well, because people would then come around and say, okay, well, no, I get paid for the work I have done, or I kind of reap this element before I sign myself into another contract. There was very common year in a day contracts, which will be arranged at Beeltana. And anyone who is engaging in some form of spiritual practice, they may be working with gods, guides, guardians, ancestors, whatever it is in their practice for them. Beeltan energy is a time to consciously take a step back from doing the work and think about the work you're doing. Mm. Think about, you know, what is the agreement? What is my connection? You know, does it need to change? Have I grown and changed? Is there more I could be doing? Is there less I should be doing? And then asking about, like, is this the time when I no longer need to work with this God, guide, guardian? And so making a common practice for those annual timeframes, those annual shifts in the energy, knowing that you're then going to be investing your energy from the moment forward. Because from Beeltana, it's not just a case of, oh, I did this one thing now. It's then engaging with, what are you going to do regularly in this moment to ensure your harvest come Lunasa? And so the consideration of agreements, the consideration of where you are moving your energy, that is something that I would encourage anyone to be doing. And it's, we get caught up in the day to day. We do. As much as, you know, we get caught up in our jobs, we get caught up in our home life, we can get caught up in our spiritual life too. We end up just, here's me just tipping the boxes, going, lighting the candle, moving the votive offerings around. Like, that becomes a routine, which is good for living our life as a daily pagan, for living in daily spirituality. But if we don't have some time to take that step back, to take a look at the bigger picture, and then to ask ourselves, do I need to revise my relationships? Do I need to engage? Or is it a time that I've now grown and I need to take my contract or my agreement with my God's guide and guardians to the next level? That's a good thing to be considering around Beeltana. If you're looking for something smaller, think about where your energy is going. And then think about, how do you protect yourself and your energy, which is your abundance? Because if you think about it, like we all work jobs. We all kind of have some transactional relationship where we need to earn money to pay for the rent, pay for the household, pay for the food bills. But what we're actually doing is we're giving our energy to some cause, to some purpose. So how are you spending that energy? How are you investing that energy? And watch for the people who are taking advantage of your efforts and your energy, because that happens mm-hmm. within spiritual communities as much as it happens in the office environment or anywhere else. So mm-hmm. there's one other lovely one that I'm quite the fan of. If you can catch the first ray of sun in a natural standing body of water, a spring or a pool, if you can catch the first ray of sun that hits that pool on Beltane, that is not just healing, it's also beautifying. So you can capture that water and then keep it throughout the rest of the year for like healing kind of practices on yourself, or also to put on your face for like, you know, making yourself look a little bit good too.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to do that. I'm going to set out some water. I'm going to sit there and stare at it. Like, yeah, come on now. No,
it's got to be the dawn. You got to set the timer. It has to be the first.
I'll get up early.
That sunlight touches that water.
I'll get
that
up early.
That is when it's imbued. That is when it does.
So, then of course we'll probably have an Oregon morning where it's like, ah, it's cloudy.
Yeah. So Ireland.
But what are your personal plans, if you're willing to share them, for Beltane this year? Do you have something special planned?
It's not something special. It's something that we always kind of do. Uh-huh. Because as I said, once you know, then, you know, it's on you to be aware of, you know, engaging with your knowledge. And that's why we teach everything that we do. We teach people so that they know, but then the onus is on them to use the knowledge they have learned for their betterment. And so for me and Laura, as soon as it goes pretty much sunset on April 30th until noon on May the 1st, we will be going nowhere, doing nothing, spending nothing, lighting no fire, gifting nothing. Now, that's not out of begrudging. That's out of defensiveness. It's out of thinking like, okay, we're going to take this time to consider like, where is our growth? Where is our abundance going to come for the next year? And we do this in our business. As much as Laura and I like run the Irish Pagan School, we run the business in line with our ethos and with our principles, not just as people, but also as pagans. And so, you know, usually we end up sitting in the office for a bit of time and actually talking back and forward about like that big picture stuff. Like, where's our contract? Where's our agreements? Who are we working with this year? Who's going to be, you know, good to approach for a podcast, an interview, a teaching, something like that. But then also once it goes afternoon, if we get a good bit of sunshine, I tend to get out into it, like, you know, try and get like some native natural environment, because it is about that shift in the natural world that's happening at this time of season. And so being able to kind of forest bathing is the word that like I most am comfortable with. You know, yes, okay, I will jump in the fucking sea. I'm not the best for swimming, but if I can get myself off into a forest, I will absolutely be loving that. I will kind of shed everything I need to let go of and then come out of it absolutely charged, standing tall like an oak tree after that. So yeah, it's that kind of awareness that, you know, we will be kind of locking down and hunkering down, but not out of defensiveness of like keep everyone away. It's out of like, how do we build the strongest energy engine for ourselves to then drive that forward into everything we want to do for the next year, so that our teaching is the best it can be, our community is the best it can be, and for, you know, ourselves then to grow our abundance so our home life can be the best it can be, our structure and stability can be the best it can be. So that's kind of what we do. And it's using that shift and that energy, and that's the way we choose to do it, because regardless of the season, my contract with the Dagda is solid. I am sworn, I am blooded, I have a tattoo on my wrist, which is a mark for him. I'm not going to be revisiting or reviewing any of my agreements with him, because that's just in place now for the rest of this existence, and it may be for my previous lives. I don't fucking know. The guy is tricksy the way he is. So my focus then is on, how can I use that energy? How can I use that natural shift and those kind of intentional? And again, as I said, people in Ireland have been honoring Beltane for generations, for thousands of years. So me getting out onto the island, putting my feet somewhere on a hill, a mound, anywhere I can do it, is connecting with that generational energy for my ancestors who have walked this land as well. So that's for me being in Ireland. But if someone isn't in Ireland, you don't have to go to fucking Ireland to do this. Acknowledge that, you know, wherever you are living in the world, people have been acknowledging some shift and change in environmental cycles at that time, in natural cycles. Try and find out what the natural cycles are for you and then work within the environment that you have would be my best recommendation for that. But of course, Ireland's great. If you can't get to Ireland, I'm fucking biased.
Yeah. Well, and I, for those of you that are in Pacific Northwest, I will say that I planted some blue-eyed grass, which is a native plant out here, and every year it flowers for the first time on Bealtaine.
Yeah.
Every year. And it's a beautiful indigo-colored flower with a little yellow stripe on the inside. It's 5 petals. And I think only 1 year did it flower early, but like every other year since I planted it, Bealtaine, I wake up on Bealtaine and the blue-eyed grass has flowered.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also a time when this is like the season when the Oregon grape, which is our yellow flower with kind of like holly type leaves. And that tends to flower around this time of year as well. So it's, you know,
speaking of yellow flowers, there's a very specific tradition associated with Bealtaine and yellow flowers.
All right.
Do you know this one?
I know of this. It's like you're supposed to circle the house with the yellow flowers or something like that.
Yes. Essentially, Your first kind of grown yellow flowers, like for Bealtaine for that evening, from like, you know, sundown in the 31st of April through to afternoon. And I mean, like after the midday on the first, you need to get yellow flowers and put them on your threshold, anywhere that is an ingress or egress for your property. And that is specifically to keep the other crowd out.
Keep them from stealing your butter.
Well, or getting anywhere into your property. And so like the yellow flowers, and that's one thing I absolutely love about it as well. All of the traditions are dealing with natural environmental cycles. And so you saying that this kind of particular thing you planted, that's an acknowledgement of Bealtaine energy. And even if it is the next day, or even if it is a day early, it shows you that our world, or the entire kind of spinning blue rock that we live in, follows certain natural cycles. And our ancestors have always been aware of those natural cycles. And as much as we get caught up in the concept of time, as in down to seconds, minutes, hours, like our ancestors didn't worry about what hour of the day it was. A lot of them, especially in Ireland, didn't have access to a clock. What they would worry about or focus on was sundown, sunset, how many of like, you know, seasonal kind of shifts am I going to get? And what is the weather kind of dictating? Or what is the growth in the world around me dictating for what I do in this moment and how I'm going to resolve things going forward? So sometimes we need to forget about the fucking minutes of every day and focus on the bigger cycles to get out of our own heads.
And again, this is where we insert the capitalism has ruined everything, including introducing clocks.
Well, the Industrial Revolution went out of its way to specifically turn humans into parts of a machine.
Yes.
Correct. Right.
You know, before the Industrial Revolution, people were subsistence living within their own care areas or farming enough to kind of give to their landlords if they had to fucking pay rent in Ireland, because English landlords are assholes. Let's not get onto that. We don't have time for that. Maybe another session. But we have to acknowledge that some part of our existence as people has broken with the natural environmental order. Some part of like us as an entity or as a species on this planet is no longer bound to the flow of nature around us because we have changed and altered the physicality of our world so that we can go 24 hours. We can have lights on. We can, you know, work all around the clock, all the hours. And then, you know, the systems that have been developed by our own species, set to privilege few, not all. Yes, I am more socialist than capitalist. It's not designed so that everyone wins. It's designed that like people selling their energy, exchanging their energy, fulfill subsistence for themselves, but bounty for others. And so again, taking a little bit back to the Bealtaine talk here, if you are gainfully employed in some area, Bealeton is a perfect time to be asking yourself, is this the job you should be doing?
Mm-hmm.
Is there another job you should be pursuing? Because it is about your agreements and your contracts and your energy. Where are you giving your energy now? And how does that lead to your personal abundance and protecting your abundance for the next year?
Mm. John, thank you so much. As always, this has just been enlightening and lovely, and just I'm so happy that you've come to join us, and I can't wait for you to get out here this November and stomp around in the Gorge and all the other places.
I'm looking forward to it. I saw the video you posted recently of the environment, and I'm like, those hills.
Yes.
Wow. Those hills look great.
Yeah.
And beautiful.
It's pretty spectacular. I sent Laura like a whole bunch of video. I'm like, Laura, look at this place. All right, we're going inside. Like, it has my commentary.
Well, I'm honored to be invited. I know in some capacities I'm Laura's support individual. Laura does not travel without John, but and Laura tells me I need to tell people about this too. I'm actually quite good at what I do.
Yes, you are.
I don't believe it, but if I say it enough, then I might believe it eventually.
Yeah, you have a lot to share.
I'll keep saying it.
Yeah, and for those who are not familiar, we're talking about meeting at the Ford Morgan Immersion, which I am delighted to have the opportunity to co-facilitate with John and Laura and Yawo Carla Gaskins Nathan. But John, so where all can people find you and learn more about your work?
Anywhere online you search for the Irish Pagan School, or the Dag the Bard. So I go by Scaly Beog, which is the Irish for little storyteller, because the god I work for is on Dag the Moor. He is the big Dagda. I am his little storyteller. So that's where Scaly Beog comes from. But yeah, if you search Dag the Bard in the socials, Irish Pagan School in the socials, that's where you'll find me. I'm quite regularly on YouTube talking about all of our content, trying to inspire people about our native spirituality and mythology, and also sharing questions. TikTok has me lately. And
Your TikTok is great. I love your TikTok.
It is.
Yes.
It really is. It's so good.
Yes. And that's at Irish. It's at Irish Pagan School. That's the TikTok handle where you use. Yeah. Yo, y'all, you need to follow that. John does a lot, and Laura, but John's been doing a lot of them lately about, you know, just giving a lot. I mean, I learned so much from you talking about the language of the god Lu and, you know, the sun shining out his face. It's like, no, he's not a sun god. He was just really good looking.
Yeah.
And that there was cultural context that I hadn't even picked up. I knew that he wasn't a sun god, but I didn't know that that's what the shining out of the face meant. So that's, you know, those pieces just delightfully come through my algorithm, and I welcome them.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm glad. Well, I'm trying to honor an ancient Irish tradition by doing that. I refer to myself as a Dag the Bard, and at any gathering, at any kind of gathering, a bard will be put to the kesht, which is the Irish word for question. And so someone would just shout the word kesht, everyone would go to a hush, and then someone would ask their question. They'd ask their kesht of the bard, and then the bard is on the spot. Can they answer that? Can they not just answer the question? Did they have the knowledge? Did they have the chops? Did they have the skill to perform a story, to perform an answer that is educational and enlightening all at the same time? And so I'm trying to utilize TikTok in that way to put myself to the kesht and then see if I can turn up and answer those questions.
That's wonderful. Well, John, thank you so much for being with us today. And friends, make sure you're following the Irish Pagan School on Instagram and TikTok and all the places. They have so many resources. A lot of them are free, like a lot of free stuff. And the ones that have cost are super reasonable. So please go and get, and my dog is having a fit. But
he's like, I made it. I held on for dear life.
I held on for dear life. Well, the cat has employed him to get my attention, and he's being used. He doesn't realize that he's being used. So
I banished both of our cats from the office before I started this. So
smart man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone,
I did the homework. I was prepared.
It's like, I'm going to keep the critters out, and I'm going to do the thing. Well, everyone, thank you so much for being with us. John, thank you for being with us. Everyone, have a wonderful Bealtaine. Don't give away your butter, and we will see everybody next week. Thank you for listening to That Witch Life podcast. Our music is by Dustin Schultz. editing by Corey Drake. If you like what we do, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee or check out our merch on our Etsy store or join us on Patreon for bonus content, ad-free episodes, or to join our Witch Squad. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For show notes, audio transcript, or to ask us a question to answer on a future episode, go to thatwitchlife.com. Until then, keep moting that shit. We will talk to you next week.
So mote it be.